Thank you very, very much for the invitation. It's really a big pleasure for me to be there, at least virtually. And I hope sometime in the future to be there in person. So let me start with this presentation of UC Underground Test of Quantum Mechanics, because I will speak not only about the collapse models, but I will add to the end something else as well. I have to make a warning before starting. I'm an experimentalist, so I will present the experiment. Hello, Lee. Hi, nice to see you. You're more or less the only one I'm seeing. Hello. Okay. Happy to see you again. Super. So let me start by telling you a few things about myself. So I was, as you might guess from my name, I was born in Romania. So that's Romania, actually in the center, very center of the country, a very beautiful town, which is called Brașov. And I show you this picture. So this is the main square of this beautiful town. And that's another view because it stays near Carpathian Mountains, which are very nice and very famous for this castle. And this castle is the Bran Castle, which is pretty famous, at least in the world, in a certain type of world. It's more or less seen like this, because it's the very famous castle of the Dracula figure. So that's Dracula figure. I was born there. And that, of course, you might know history of Romania. Don't be worried, I'm not making a history talk. But however, I want to use this as an introduction because, of course, a person like me born there, what could I be working on a zombie cat, of course. So somehow the presentation and my talk today is related with the measurement problem, which is exemplified by the Schrödinger cat. So we will get here sometime soon. And presently, actually, I'm now right here in my office. I'm still at work. Here it's nearly, it's 8:35 in the evening, but I'm at work. We are not in, we are in kind of a lockdown, but our lab continue to work. That's our accelerator where I am working in the other part of my activity, because the other part, so I'm doing quantum experiments, but I'm also doing experiments on an electron-positron collider, which is called Daphne, where we are doing experiments. That's a picture from inside. And in this electron-positron collider, which is tuned at the phi resonance, producing strangeness, so strange quark, that's part of my team, of course, before it's 2019, when we installed inside a Siddhartha experiment, which is measuring interaction of strangeness with nuclear matter, which became very, very hot topic again 2 days ago, because it's related with the equation of states of neutron stars. However, that's not what I'm talking about this evening, but our experiments done in the Gran Sasso underground laboratory, which is 150 kilometers far away from Rome. My lab is here, 20 kilometers far from Rome in Frascati. And that's Gran Sasso lab, which is underground in a specific sense that it is under mountain. Under mountain where there are many experiments installed. Many of these experiments are dealing with dark matter and neutrino physics, but we deal with quantum mechanics. And that's a gallery there, which is actually connecting two towns, L'Aquila and Teramo. And one is going to perform experiments in this lab when you are looking for events which are either very rare or even not existent. So when the physics you are looking for, like dark matter, double beta neutrino, SDK, quantum mechanics violations, and you are looking for signals related to this, you wouldn't like to be bothered by the cosmic rays, which are becoming one of the important sources of fake events for those you are looking for, so you don't want them. So you go underground in this undermountain lab where the cosmic rays are cut off by a factor 10 to the 6. So you get rid of 10 to the 6 part of your cosmic radiation. Still, that's not all the story. You still have, I'll show you in a moment, some residual radiation coming from underground, like the radon gas coming from nuclear decays from uranium and thorium, which are naturally embedded in the earth. Okay, so that's the entrance. So that's the gallery, which goes from Aquila to Teramo. That's the entrance in the underground lab. And that's how it looks around. We are in one of these boxes because there are three big holes and the smaller places which are hosting experiments which do not require a lot of space. And that's actually me staying to the electronic engineer in my group, which means looking for something, which what I'm going to tell you about are collapse model. So dynamical collapse model, which are set to answer, so kind of answer to the measurement problem. And on the other side, I will briefly mention at the end, the Pauli exclusion principle violation. So there are kind of two faces of the same coin, but they are very different, because in one, and I understood from Alessia that you have already had a talk from Roger Penrose, what you believe it's more basic, it's general relativity. So you try somehow to get quantum physics embedded inside the general relativity. Well, in the other case, I will show you briefly mention a kind of an example where you try to do the opposite, namely to quantize the general relativity, and you might have indications coming from this type of searches. And that's part of my group in the Gran Sasso lab. Of course, you might guess it's before 2019, simply because we do not wear masks. And that's instead in October last year, we could still go there and do some experimental research. Fortunately, our experiments, we have a set of experiments there are running in remote, but though we still need to go there and do some maintenance and every now and then some modifications to our apparata. So I'll start by telling you something about our first set of experiments, which are related with the measurement problem. And you see here kind of the Schrödinger cat, which I'm not going to explain this community because of course, all of you know what it is about, this poor cat, which is kind of dead and alive in the same time. And it has been used as a kind of a paradox for the measurement problem, which it's solved in standard quantum mechanics by a postulate, which says that when you do a measurement, the wave function is collapsing in one of the possible outcomes, and it does not have a physical interpretation. I mean, it does not have a physical mechanism which is realizing this collapse. And solutions to this measurement problem have been kind of proposed along the years. I'm showing you here only some of them. That's far to be a complete list, which is becoming richer and richer as years are passing by. I don't choose these ones because they are actually relying on a different type of approaches. The first one, it's relying on, I dare say, ontological approach, because you take for granted the fact that reality is made of particles. So when you say an electron is a particle. So based on this ontology, you solve the problem in a kind of associating some waves. Well, they are not really waves, but you have an ontology there. The second one, many world interpretation, takes quantum mechanics as being true. So there is a wave function. If there is a wave function, you naturally arrive at the many world interpretation, which all problems, some of them still needing further, let's say, work. Finally, and for an experimentalist as I am, the attractiveness of the third one is dynamical collapse models stays in the fact that you can do experiments in order to test it. And that goes because in the framework of the dynamical collapse models, which are a natural solution of the measurement problem, you are actually modifying the Schrödinger equation. In that sense, and only in that sense, they are kind of rival theory of quantum mechanics, because you do something more. And when you modify the theory, of course, you expect to have experiment which experimental outcomes which are not there in the first place. And of course that in this case, you might assume that if you have additional phenomena, this phenomena might be related to its gravity in the sense that since gravity is not trivially or easy quantized, you might expect that gravity kind of, if you want to find a guilty one for your additional terms in the Schrödinger equation, you might hope that the protagonist here is the gravity. And this again goes that if you modify the Schrödinger equation, and this already tells you that the theory is not relativistic, of course, so you add additional terms. And these additional terms have been proposed many years ago. That are not even the original articles, which date back to the 70s and even before to original ideas in the 60s of Karol Hase in Budapest. But still, the model was further on developed by Girardi, Rimini, Weber, and Pearl, which showed that if you cleverly add to the standard Schrödinger equation additional non-linear terms, because the main problem of superposition and of measurement problem associated with the superposition, of course, it's related with the linear nature of the Schrödinger equation. As long as you have a linear equation, you will never get rid of the superposition. So a clever idea is to get rid of the linear equation. But of course, that if you really want to be clever, you can't do it randomly. You need to preserve all the known feature and all the experimental results you have, including the Born rule. So when you modify the Schrödinger equation, adding non-linear terms, you have to do this cleverly. And the one model, which actually is the continuous spontaneous localization model, a realization of these collapse models, it's shown here, which is introducing nonlinear stochastic terms just to preserve the known quantum feature. And in adding these terms, this is in no way a fundamental theory. This would be seen like this, an effective model of something which is still unknown. As an effective model, it has parameters. And these parameters, in this sense, are a kind of a collapse strength. I'll explain in a moment what they are, and the collapse length. The collapse strength gives you the timing, or it makes the transition from quantum properties to the macroscopic world, going from the particle, which preserve quantum featuresness like forever, and to a table which collapses its wave function nearly instantaneous. So the collapse strength is a kind of a frequency to which the collapse occurs for the single particle, but bearing in mind that the collapse for a macroscopic system, it's amplified with the number of particles inside the system. So for a macroscopic body with an Avogadro number of particles, you might see that the Avogadro number multiplied with the frequency, which even if it's small, still collapses the wave function of the macroscopic body very, very fast. So these parameters, the collapse strength and the correlation length, which means, so in this context, the collapse, it's in the space, so it's collapse in space, in position basis, and the wave function gets, yes, collapse, but it's not into a point. It's collapse in a Gaussian around a certain position, and that's the collapse length, the correlation length, so where the wave function was collapsed. And so there are actually two parameters of these models. One can discuss about the model, but I don't want to keep discussing about the model. I want to arrive at what we have experimentally done. However, for these parameters, so being experimental parameters in some sense, already values have been proposed years ago. The first proposal was by Girardi himself, which proposed that the collapse length is something like 10 to minus 17 for this correlation length, 10 to minus 5 centimeter. And he did this proposal, which is a bit cautious, thinking that the well, the quantum properties might extend for objects which arrive up to really macroscopic particles. So macroscopic behavior, it's starting to take over from bodies which have 10 to 13 particles and so on. While Adler, years after 2007, has made a much more courageous proposal, 10 to minus, so there are 10 orders of magnitude more or less in between the proposed parameters for the collapse strength. And Adler relied on the idea that somehow, even if there are no, there were no experiments in this mesoscopic land, that's the problem. You doing experiments here, it's very, very, very heavy because the experiments you might do are interference experiments where of course there are no interference experiments going up to 10 to the 13 particles. One is bridging somehow this gap to reach somehow this value, but arriving to the Girardi with experiments of interference, it's really out of the technological reach for the moment. So one stayed with these two values, and one way is to go with interference experiments, which, however, proves to be very hard beyond the threshold of some thousands particles. But there is another effect, which is not direct, it's kind of indirect effect, which has been underline in the context of dynamical collapse models, namely that a charged particle, even a free electron, interacting with this collapsing entity, which I could call it field, even if calling field is not proper because one might assume field is quantized, but it's not. So collapsing entity, noise or whatever, this one is shaking the particle. I'll show something more in a minute. And shaking this particle around, a charged particle emits radiation. And that's the ansatz on which we are going on to do the experiments we do in Frascati. So you are having a radiation, which in standard quantum mechanics, you don't have it there. This is called a spontaneous radiation. And before you ask me, this spontaneous radiation does not conserve energy. So you have a violation of the energy conservation on which you are not really very much worried in the first sense, because you might hope to recover it if you will go beyond the effective, beyond the, let's say, the model, and you will find the theory. And it has been also proposed, there are some articles around which has proposed that the missing part, it's taken over by the dark energy. So you conserve somehow, but I'm not going to speculate on this. So that's exactly what we are measuring. Radiation, which is electromagnetic radiation, having a continuum spectrum, which has been already calculated in a paper by Fu and Pearl in 97, when first experiments, first approaches were done in this direction. And it has been, calculated in these first articles that the spectrum goes with 1/energy depending on the lambda. So you can set a limit on lambda if you perform an experiment where you measure a radiation, you can set definitely limits on lambda. On the lambda parameter, which I showed you before, is the collapse strength. However, if I do the experiment in my office, since the cosmic radiation is taking over, you are indeed constraining lambda, but you are constraining it so lousy that it's not worth taking into consideration. So you need to do an experiment which in principle would be able, at least would have the ambition to measure zero. Now you can't measure zero, but you should approach your experiment to some meaningful saying something about this. And the first thing we have done in this context was to take data from another experiment, not ours, but from another experiment underground, which is belonging to the IJEX collaboration, which have done an experiment underground time ago, you see 1990, so 20 years ago. And we were reanalyzing their data, that's the spectrum of X-rays they have measured with this germanium detector, to check whether what you get it's meaningful or meaningless. And from this analysis already in 2017, we were able to check and to set extreme constraint and check that this method is really, really worth pursuing. Because you see here in the blue, with the blue line, that if you assume that lambda is a universal constant which does not depend on the particle type, you practically get rid. So you see here, there is a plot which has the lambda parameter against RC. The initial proposal of Ghirardi, Rimini, and Weber was for a fixed value of RC, which is this one, so 10 to minus 7 meters. So these are the points here. But if you extend, if you open up also this value, you get a plot which stays in this bidimensional plot and not only these points. However, you can see that you can, if you assume that lambda is universal constant, not depending on the particle type, you are out of any initial proposal, so you can forget about the dynamical collapse model. This, however, it's not so realistic. And if you assume that lambda parameter also depends on the particle mass and on the particle type, you get on the pink curve, the pink exclusion plot here, and you kind of exclude within two sigma, so you don't really exclude it, but you stay already confident that you are not really, so Adler, it's kind of excluded. You are still far away, some orders of magnitude, for Ghirardi, Rimini, and Weber in this collapse model, which are generic collapse models. You don't have here any gravity yet. Now I start to show you if you want to go beyond a generic collapse model, which is this continuous spontaneous localization where you do not care who is the guilty for the collapse, it's what I showed you before. However, if you want to identify the collapse as being related with gravity, which is what I'm going to show you in what comes next, you have a kind of, you can do more refined work, both from theoretical and experimental point of view. And this is what I'm going to show you in what comes next, namely this work we published recently in Nature Physics, and it's bearing on the idea which has been put forward by, initially by Diogi, because this is a kind of the Schrödinger Newton equation, so where you include gravity with its, let's say, not quantum feature, but you include it in this Schrödinger Newton equation. Barrows goes a bit kind of more ambitiously in the explanation, in the power of the explanation, because he is actually making this physics argument that gravity cannot be quantized. And however, whenever you have a superposition of a wave function that's also a superposition of two space-time or even more space-time solutions, and since you can't gravitize since you can't quantize gravity, somehow a back reaction from the space-time, it's practically collapsing your wave function. However, so both of them are actually proposing a formula to calculate the decay time, so how long this superposition is lasting. And the heuristic formula proposed by Roger Penrose for the decay time, it's rather similar, even if physics somehow it's not quite identical, to the one proposed by Loyos Diogi, and that's it. So that's the time of the superposition. You see here it's quite a simple formula, where actually what goes into the denominator, which the how large in gravitational term the superposition is, and that's a formula to calculate it. However, if you take where you have in a mu, there is the mass distribution, of course you can't go to the point mass distribution because you end up with infinities. So this has been actually handled quite differently by Diogi and Penrose. And while Diogi has proposed to include a kind of a phenomenological parameter, so a new parameter which should be kind of fixed by experiment, Roger proposed a formula which gives this mass distribution, taking into account a stationary solution of the Schrödinger-Newton equation. So we have kind of here a particle mass density parameter R0. And that's what we were relating with our experiment. So the collapse depends on the effective size of the mass density of particles which are in superposition. And the randomness shows up as a diffusion in particles motion, resulting again in emission of radiation. I have already to tell you, maybe Roger told you himself, that he does not agree with the fact that there is a spontaneous radiation. So what is he working at right now? It's a way to get rid of the spontaneous radiation. I know he's working on this with some retroaction and things like that. However, if you stay on today's physics, and if you compute, if you take for granted the modern physics and what you know about the quantum physics, our colleagues, Angelo Bassi from Trieste and Sandro Donadì, who are the Lajos Diósi themselves, put forward the formalism, which in our paper is presented in the supplementary information how to derive this Lindblad equation, where you have, beyond the standard quantum mechanics, you have the collapsing gravity collapsing mechanism here, gravity related, to say, to be more honest, because you don't have quantum gravity, you have gravity related collapse, where you have here the mass, this mass density operator, and you work out this mass density operator with some assumptions. Among this assumption, there is the Poisson character of the interaction, and I don't want to read you here, but I only have to tell you that working this formula out, we have to do some, we did some assumptions for the energy range, which is related with the wavelength of the system. So this transfers in the energy range. And because that's related with the R0 parameter, we were putting a limit on. And if you work in the energy range, which stays between, wavelengths between 10 to minus 5 and 10 to minus 1 nanometers, which translate into this energy for the radiation, you arrive very nicely, since this energy range stays, you see, in it's higher than the nuclear radius, but it's smaller than the atomic radius, you have a kind of a magic effect on emission from the nucleus, which is coherent. So you have a square number of, it squares in the number of the protons from the nuclei. And that's very nice because it makes your search more powerful and doesn't kill the radiation because you don't have a, what is emitted from proton, it's eaten by the electrons and the other way around. So you have to stay in this energy range, which still from experimental point of view, it's pretty broad. You have to have a detector able to measure this energy range between 10 kiloelectron volt and so it's X-rays going to gamma radiation. And if you succeed to do so, you have this magic coherent emission, which amplifies your radiation by a factor of square of the number of the protons. And if you work out the formula, you arrive to this emission rate. So the radiation you are looking for goes with the power 2 of number of the protons with total number of emitting atoms. And it's in inverse of the cube of the density of this R0 parameter of the, I was mentioning before. That's a kind of a, pictorial view of what we imagine it can happen. So you have a superposition of two different space times, and this does not, is jiggling the particle producing radiation, but there's the same mechanism which in the end collapse the wave function in times which scale I showed you before, which are very short for massive objects, long, pretty long for microscopic particles. So that from here for us experimentalists was quite straight on, not easy, but straight on, because you have to look for radiation, which is very, very faint. And the first thing to do is to go to Gran Sasso. But that's not yet enough. That's our paper, which we published recently in Nature Physics. And we had a very nice surprise to discover by December that this was in the second place of 10 top 10 non-COVID, however, articles in this science favorite stories. And what we have done was to set up experiment which was done measuring radiation with ultra pure germanium detectors, which are optimized in that energy range I showed you before. You don't see, however, the ultra pure germanium detectors because they are hidden in these boxes of pure lead. And you have to hide still there because you have to protect them against residual radiation coming from radon, from underground, and coming from materials, so from residual radionuclides present wherever, including us. So we also have residual nuclear activity. So you have to shelter them inside the ultra pure copper and lead. And this is quite tedious, complicated, and not easy to do, because all these materials need to be kept underground for a time before you do the experiment, because there are some natural radionuclides which have short decay times, and you should wait to get rid of them because they are introducing a lot of radiation. So that's a kind of a view of our setup, where you see the germanium detector, which was in our case our emettitor itself. So we measured germanium, measured itself, spontaneous radiation coming from the nucleus of germanium itself. There are some other materials which are being measured, each one with its efficiency, like copper and lead themselves. And that's what we have obtained. So that's the spectrum we have obtained in 2 months of data taking. And we chose to not to look at all the spectrum, but to look in a specific energy range, which is between 1 and 3 mega electron volts, so it's gamma rays. We choose this spectrum for many reasons. I'm not going to explain them all unless you are interested, but basically because we stayed away from the mass, which is at lower energy and which for sure it's not spontaneous radiation, but it is at least part of it, big part of it is generated by steel. As you might see here, there are cobalt and potassium, which we couldn't get rid completely of them. So we have radionuclides, which are easily to be identified, which we know are there, and which suffers, so which are dumped in radiation and produce this continuum part of the spectrum. So we have analyzed this region because stays a bit farther away from the mass at lower energies. We have realized statistical analysis with a Bayesian model, and we arrive at, let's say, at this result in which we set a limit on the R0 parameter, which is the one you see here, 0.54 10 to minus 10, which should have been compared, you see here. So this should have been compared with the R0 coming from the ansatz we did before. And you can read here. So if you calculate the R0 as a mean square displacement of a nucleus in a lattice, with this assumption. So that's our theoretical value, which is 0.05 10 to the minus 10. And we found a factor 10, let's say, exclusion of this parameter. So in that sense, we excluded by a factor 10 the simplest version of this model. And that's a figure taken from our paper, where that it's the value I showed you before, while the limit we put on this mass distribution coming from this gravity-related collapse model, which stays here. And But that's only the beginning. So what I want to say here is that that's only the beginning, because the assumption put forward to calculate this radiation are not very realistic. Like, the models are non-Markovian and they are without diffusion. So without, let's say, realistic effects. So our next steps, what we want to do in the near future, is to try to introduce memory effects and to introduce these diffusion effects, which for sure are changing the situation. And they are modeling, of course, the spectrum in a different way. So more complex, more rich dynamics, which we can start to work only right now. On the other side, if you forget about the fact that the models might be necessarily related with gravity, and you go back to the general collapse models, which go under the name continuous spontaneous localization, that's a paper published last year, which is showing, again, limits which are presently set in this context, we obtain, we didn't publish yet, we are now having this paper in preparation, which we will submit soon to publication. We also get in this context a much better limit in this context. So that's what we can exclude completely Adler and approach more and more on the realm of the Girardi, let's say, kind of ultimate Girardi limit in this context. And that's what we are working right now, meaning what we are working, we are refining not only theory, but we are also refining the experiment. So we are refining it, introducing an additional target in the sense of ultra-pure Roman lead. Roman means that it was actually taken from Roman zinc ships, which were recovered and having stayed on the bottom of the sea for quite 2000 years. It's ultra pure in the sense that radioactivity inside decayed nearly completely. And it's very, very used. It's very rare, but it's used in many experiments in Gran Sasso because you don't have residual radiation. And that's the first experiment we did, and we are analyzing it right now. It's cleaner than our past experiment. So we expect to get even better limits, and not only even better limits, but what we expect to get is to approach a shape of the spectrum which allows us to go towards this colored models where you have memory effects and so on and so forth. There is also an item here, but I'm not going to bore you, on a machine learning approach to data analysis and in relation with a new type of electronics and readout of the signals. Good. And we have done a series of workshops in this context. One was in presence in 2019 when we started to discuss, you see, with Lajos Diozsi and with Roger, that was previous to his assignment of the Nobel Prize. And that's opened a lot of new questions which are related with what induces the collapse, if any, can be related to gravity. Does it have something to do with the dark sector, and so on and so forth? We have also organized a workshop, actually this was online, in December last year, which was very, very nice and very successful, where we have again further on discussed all these issues. And actually Lee was one of the speakers, he was there, and you can see him here. We were having very nice discussions with Roger, was explaining us why he's not expecting radiation, actually. And I'm very curious to see why here it's Lajos who's convinced that he also doesn't like the radiation, but he didn't yet succeed to get rid of it. And I'm going in, so that would be a conclusion to this part of the talk, a kind of a funny conclusion. So we try to check how to go from to be and not to be, to be or not to be. And on relation to this, we also have an FQXI Foundational Question Institute project, which is also some kind of related. I know it's not very well looked at this orchestrated org. But okay, if you want to know more, just ask me. I know it has a bad fame. I know, I'm aware of it. In 2 minutes, I'm going to show you our other part of research was not in the title, but I still want to make a kind of advertisement for it, which is completely different. So what we are looking with the other experiment, which is called VIP, we look for possible violations. We are rather a blasphemy of the spin statistics relations of Pauli exclusion principle. And we look, that's again, well-known in this community. So wave function, which has a bosonic type or fermionic type, they don't want to stay together. And that has been put forward by Wally Greenberg, ideas of why one might expect possible violations which are related, among other things, with non-commutative space-time geometries. And bearing on this, we are looking for possible violation in atomic transitions, trying to check for atomic transitions where an electron would come on the fundamental level as a third electron, so obviously violating the Pauli exclusion principle, which would have an energy which is a trademark of this radiation, of these processes, because it's far from the, if you have a good detector, from the standard one. And related to this, we are doing a lot of research also in the framework of recent proposals of non-commutative space-time, which comes from quantum gravity. And this is, we are working on this. I don't have results to show you yet, but so quantum gravity models, like which are embedding Lorentz symmetry, not Lorentz symmetry violation, but deformations in the framework of this kappa or theta Poincaré. So this we are presently working. So we are doing the experiments. Other people are working on the theory. And if you want to know more about this, I can only recommend this paper. This is a kind of advertisement paper in March 2018 in CERN Courier, where it's a generic introduction, very simple, on the Pauli exclusion principle at best introduced. So I'm approaching here at the end. And yeah, with this joke that this could be the discovery of the century, of course, depend of how far it goes. On our side, so on our behalf, this is very interesting. We are expert in radiation detectors and in nuclear physics experiments, but we are also very keen and curious of further use of these detectors for something which makes our mind tick. And I think that these experiments are indeed very challenging, very nice, and somehow very much rewarding. These are our, let's say, financing boards and projects. I want to, of course, thank them all, starting with, of course, my institute and the Centro Fermi Institute, and also FQXI, Templeton Foundation, and European projects, tech and cost. Thank you very, very, very much.
Thanks, Catalina. This was a really nice talk.
Thank you very much. And to all of you who had the patience to listening to my talk.
So are there questions? So first from students. So for now, I do not see questions from students, but I think Lee has a question.
Yes, I was struck that you came within an order of magnitude the Penrose DOC. You say you ruled out Penrose DOC, but that's completely different physics than in your experiment. How is it you came within an order of magnitude?
I hear you very badly. Can you please let me try to...
Sorry, I'll talk louder. Is that better?
Yes.
Yes. You ruled out Penrose DOC, but only by an order of magnitude.
Yes.
How did you come so close?
If we are what?
Why do you think the experiment comes within just one order of magnitude?
That's because of our limitations. So it's related to the fact that we couldn't dump. So when we arrived to this radiation, that's only experimental issue. So if we would be able to go with a detector, which is kind of a better detector, or we would be able to shield more our apparatus, we would be able to get much better. And that's what we are doing right now. Because you see, the spectrum here, the one we analyzed, it's the one which produced our limits on R0. And this limit, it has a nice history because, of course, these events, part of these events are, we know what they are due to because we have done a Monte Carlo simulation. So there are 508 events here. Out of these, around 500, we succeeded to identify as being assigned to known sources. 80 are assigned to unknown sources. And we use this 80 to calculate this factor 10 you mentioned. If we would be able to understand the origin of the additional 80 or to do an experiment which is more sensitive, we would be able to go much farther. And that's what we are struggling it right now, to be more able to identify, either to kill the background from origin, so not to have potassium anymore, not to have cobalt anymore, or instead to be more, let's say, able to pick up the events and say, you and you and you and you are belonging to the mother, which is potassium. It's a strong experimental struggle. At least for this very simple model, but I don't know what we will get when the model will become more realistic, like memory, non-Markovian and this diffusion, yeah. So this would be very interesting because their new features might, I mean, I'm sure new features because the dependence of energy would not be so trivial as 1/n, or yeah. So you would have more complex behavior. It would be very, very interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
So there is another question by a student, Hank.
Yep, hello. So I have a rather kind of stupid question, I guess, about the fundamental philosophy behind these models of quantum mechanics. So if I understood correctly, Penrose's idea was to argue that like gravity causes the collapse at a microscopic level. Is that correct?
Not really. Because what Penrose is insisting again and again and again, it's not to use gravity-induced collapse, but to use gravity-related collapse. Because what he claims is that he doesn't know whether there is an influence from gravity to the wave function, or there is a completely new theory, which, as far as I understood, he advocates, mm-hmm. which should be a kind of, should look, from what I understood, more like a general relativity theory. So based on general relativity principles, more like a quantum principle. So no, it's not, the dynamics is not necessary that gravity induces the collapse.
Mm-hmm.
They are related, but you do not know how, because Penrose, differently from Diogi, does not advocate a dynamics. So he is now trying to work on this because he doesn't like the radiation, but he's saying, I don't know what's the dynamics. It's up to you to discover.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying
Lee, you might correct me if I'm wrong, because you certainly know better. You are muted.
There we are. No, that sounds like Roger. I think you're quoting his view correctly.
Yeah. Hank?
So he's saying that gravity induces, well, not induces, sorry, gravity. The collapse is related to gravitational effects without having gravity being quantized? Is that the idea?
Yes, and even more, he claims that gravity cannot be quantized and will never be quantized because it's the wrong approach. What he claims is quantum. Now I'm going to exaggerate, but he claims that quantum is wrong, gravity is right, in the sense that general relativity is right, and you need a new theory which will not end up in quantum mechanics.
So Roger says we have to gravitize the quantum.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
Yes.
I'm glad you see.
One thing I'm kind of like not really understanding that position is, like, for example, if we take a superconductor, like a metal to superconductor transition, that's a purely quantum phase transition where you break the U1 gauge symmetry. I'm just wondering how gravity is even able to do that in the first place.
Oh, that's pretty easy. You there have a wave function. So all the wave function behaves as one particle. So the macroscopicness of superconductivity doesn't matter in that sense. So your wave function is not composed of, I don't know if I explain it right, but you don't have in that context the many bodies. So you have one wave function because all your system behaves like one kind of one particle.
Okay. I think I see what you're saying. I don't think I do.
Yeah, you see, there are two different approaches, as Lee was saying. So you can think to gravitize the quantum. Mm-hmm. As was Einstein trying to do for long, or you can try to quantize gravity, but they are completely different. So it's very interesting. Actually, it's to me it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, one simple thing to do, which kind of makes it not seem so mysterious, is to take the Newton equations and make a nonlinear equation where you basically add the Newton equations to the Schrodinger equation. So you have a term like psi bar psi times another psi bar psi times 1/r² between two pieces of material. And that's just what you would imagine if you thought that the wave function was real, but you were allowed to write nonlinear terms in the wave function representing the action of gravity.
Absolutely true, which is what Diogi is doing, actually.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see. That looks like a, sounds like a, like a, like a, people do time binding in condensed matter and then write down the Coulomb action 1/r. For the fermions.
Yeah, so people do things very like that in condensed matter, and that's the inspiration. Roger does do that because Roger wants to do a general relativistic version of that, which gets very frustrating because it's hard to pin him down to say what he actually, he doesn't have a completely worked out model, but if you take the words and you try to realize them the way that a condensed matter physicist would realize them with a nonlinear Schrodinger equation, then that's what Diozzi is doing.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, which is a kind of a mixed equation, which has a part which is certainly quantum. And yeah, you have the Newton potential and that's what you end up, exactly.
So there is a question now by Flaminia.
Hello, yes. Flaminia.
Hi, nice to meet you, and thank you for
nice
this nice
to meet
talk.
You.
So I have a question. So if I'm not wrong, there is a type of collapse models which can be shown to be derived from the semi-classical Einstein's equations. And so I was wondering whether you could say anything experimentally about that type of collapse models.
I'm not really aware of this. I mean, these models.
I think it's a paper by Angelo Bassi, Andre Grossart.
Okay, I got it. Yes, we are now preparing an analysis on the data which goes in that direction. Okay. Yes, yes.
Then yes,
they also have a non-Markovian model already with some memory included, and we are trying to extend the energy region to include the features of that type of model. Yes.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks to you.
I'll be tuned.
Are there other questions? So I would also ask a question. So you say that with this experiment that you were able to essentially rule out this model by Perros and Yoshi, but it is the natural parameter-free version of this model. What about other extensions of the model that include more parameters? So are you able to test or are testing already these models?
Great question. We are right now analyzing our data for a broader energy range to be sensible to these effects. Mm-hmm. And we are not yet, let's say, finished. And I can't tell you whether what we find is meaningful, really meaningful or meaningless, because we didn't yet finish our analysis. So we are in contact with Angelo and with Steve Adler, who has also gave a contribution. At some point, we even had the feeling we have seen some signal, and we get, so now I'm saying, so we need to check very well our data, because you see, before coming out with the thing that you saw a signal, it's...
Mm-hmm. Yes, I guess that you should also try to minimize the problem with the noise with the background of potassium.
Absolutely, absolutely. So from experimental point of view, this is very, very difficult experiments, as you might imagine, but also very interesting. Actually, we are now right now discussing with other groups which are doing experiments on dark matter, because some of them are measuring also radiation and some of them are overlapping radiation in the same energy region. Actually, there is, if I'm not wrong, the Sudbury lab, it's in, no, where, what's the lab? Snow Lab, it's in Canada, right? So I guess it's Snow Lab in Canada. So there might be experiments there which are doing the same things and they get radiation. So I wouldn't be surprised if more and more results would come also from this point of view. And definitely the Canadian lab, it's quite suitable because it's deep. So suitable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also in this analysis of this, so in this experiment, so you mentioned that we are using Bayesian models, Bayesian
yes.
statistics, I guess. So what type of priors are you using? And you think that this could somehow influence the result? But it's something I've never really got.
Yeah, so no, we have done many, many type of checks related with different type of priors. And we have actually studied very well the stability of our results. We didn't analyze them only with the Bayesian models. We have also analyzed them with other statistical models, and we checked that they are stable. So it's not an artifact, which of course you'd be worried if you are, let's say, doing with some priors, you might involuntarily bias your outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I was wondering. I've never got whether...
Yes, we were also worried about this. So we were actually changing and doing a lot of tests in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Are there more questions? Maybe one last question, since I don't see others. Regarding the other experiment related to the Pauli exclusion principle and the possible testing of one particular approach to quantum gravity, this non-commutative geometry, and anything related to possible deformation of the Lorentz symmetry, do you think you would be able to estimate the violation or derive a bound? Because as far as I know, there are already bounds on the violation of Lorentz invariants coming from other experiments about modified dispersion relations, let's say. So in a sense, these a new experiment would be complementary to that or reinforce that type of measurements?
Yeah, so what we have seen up to now is that for k equal 1, our limit is very, very extremely strong. It goes far beyond the Planck scale. So it excludes practically, while for the other one, it's approaching Planck scale, for k equal 2, sorry. These are our preliminary results. So for, so apparently this type of studies are extremely competitive. Extremely competitive. And we are now having a paper which we are finalizing exactly with what I told you. So with k equal 1 and k equal 2, we are approaching or going beyond the Planck scale.
Okay, that sounds very interesting.
It is.
Okay, so are there more questions or comments? Okay, so if not, let's thank again Catalina for this nice talk and discussions.
Thank you very much.